Today on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
So today we're going to talk about how AI, or artificial intelligence, and machine learning can be used in the interpretation of HRCT scans, and what the future holds for turning HRCT into a more objective and reliable tool for our patients with interstitial lung disease.
Today, Dr. Swigris and Humphreys join the podcast to discuss AI, machine learning, and HRCT in LID, standardizing diagnostics, in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Jeff Swigris. I'm a professor of medicine in the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care and Sleep Medicine at National Jewish Health in Denver, Colorado. I'm also a member of the Center for Interstitial Lung Disease there.
And I'm Steve Humphreys. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Radiology, also at National Jewish Health, where I direct the Quantitative Imaging Laboratory.
In pulmonology, we use HRCT, or high-resolution CT scans of the chest, all the time to diagnose and manage patients with interstitial lung disease. But HRCT has some challenges. Even among experts, interpretation can vary between readers and within readers over time. And sometimes important diagnostic and prognostic clues get missed. So today, we're going to talk about how AI, or artificial intelligence, and machine learning can be used in the interpretation of HRCT scans, and what the future holds for turning HRCT into a more objective and reliable tool for our patients with interstitial lung disease. Steve, you ready to get started?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So, Steve, for folks who may not know it, like me, I don't live and breathe AI. What exactly is artificial intelligence and machine learning?
Yeah, that's a great question. Artificial intelligence is really a broad term meant to describe any sort of computer system that is designed to or can do tasks that we've normally thought to be reliant on human intelligence. So these would be things like pattern recognition or predicting future events based on known data. Machine learning is actually a subtype of artificial intelligence where computer algorithms, or sometimes we call them models, are developed not with specific rules or criteria, and like if this happens, then that happens. These are algorithms whose internal parameters, which are sets of numbers, are modified based on exposure to data. So basically, algorithms are tweaked or modified, we say trained, based on known pairs of data. So you'd have an input with the desired output, and the internal parameters of a machine learning algorithm during the training process are modified to best give the desired output for an input. You can kind of think of it in a way like training a resident or a medical student, where, you know, you, over time you say, you know, here's an example CT scan, here's the right call, and the person learns over time. So we try to do that with machines. I think it's worth pointing out today, now that artificial intelligence really has kind of emerged into the collective consciousness, that a lot of times, you know, modern artificial intelligence, or what you hear about in the news or what people are exposed to in popular media, these are emerging techniques based on what are called large language models. So
that would be like ChatGPT or something like that.
Exactly. And these are systems that are much more generalized. So they're trained on massive amounts of data, mostly text, but also images. And they can do a lot more sort of things, but maybe with less depth. When we're talking about, or the things I'll talk about today are really specialized algorithms that were narrowly trained for medical applications, where frankly the bar for performance is higher than a chatbot.
Right. Got it. So So at least for some of the algorithms, maybe all of them, I mean, help me understand, I don't want to get into the weeds of it, but are these mathematical models? Like there's math in the guts of the thing that is used to spit out the output.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they're all based on digital data and numbers. So when we say training, again, that's an iterative process where, you can think of an algorithm as a black box, and you show it an input like a CT scan and say, this is the desired output. And in the training process, you can think of the numerical factors, maybe if you need a mental picture, as a dial or a knob, and those would get nudged a little bit, almost like a linear regression or something like that, where you're fitting equations based on data to give the desired response, again, for a particular input.
Got it. So in the case of HRCT, when you're training the algorithm, you have to tell the algorithm in some way that this is the thing, or this is the output, or this is what we're looking for specifically. So in the case of HRCT, for example, when we're looking for interstitial lung disease or fibrosis, experts like radiologists would take a scan and in some way say, this is fibrosis and this is not fibrosis. Is that right?
That's correct. So we rely on an approach in machine learning, typically, called supervised learning. So that's the supervision means that known data like annotated images or something where an expert has assigned a value, that's used as the basis for training. And again, in medical applications and when we're dealing with ILD, we have a high bar for performance. So when we train these algorithms, we're simultaneously thinking ahead to how do we validate it and make sure it's doing what we want it to do. And in that validation process, we also rely on those annotated images, sort of known reference standards, or you could say ground truth. There is, I would say, an emerging area or there are interesting applications of supervised learning where the outputs we're training to aren't necessarily a radiologist's interpretation of the same image, but some other piece of data, for example, a diagnosis by biopsy or disease behavior. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, I think, when we get further on in our discussion. But that's an interesting kind of application because if we're training an algorithm based on information specifically provided by expert radiologists, what that algorithm or machine learning technique is going to do is try, so to speak, in an anthropomorphic way, try to replicate what the radiologist does. And that can be very helpful for reduction in subjectivity and sort of improvements in consistency of reads. Another way of doing it, say if you trained an algorithm based on other known data, like a biopsy-confirmed diagnosis, then the computer algorithm or the machine learning is sort of has the opportunity at least to learn connections between features in the images and external data. So it's not necessarily doing exactly what a radiologist would do, but maybe making more abstract connections.
Got it. It's fascinating. Well, let's get into some of the work that you've done here over the last decade or more in bringing this really exciting field forward. I mean, your work has really launched and propelled this field to a great understanding. And I think really situated this tool in a place where it's not going to be too long. We're going to be using this quite a bit clinically. So let's talk a little bit more about some problems with radiology interpretation of HRCT first before we really dig into your work. So there's this pattern of lung injury or fibrosis called UIP, usual interstitial pneumonia, which at least in the recent past, we regarded as like the worst of the worst. Like UIP is the worst kind of fibrosis that you can have. And you know, when I would see a patient, I would pray that we saw anything other than UIP, but things have really evolved. But let's talk a little bit more about weaknesses with radiologist interpretation of CTs, with specifically talking about the diagnosis or the finding of UIP.
Yeah, that's a key point. I mean, the radiology is inherently a visual specialty. You know, the field of radiology goes back to the late 1800s when X-rays were discovered. And over that time, what radiologists or the field of radiology has learned to do is make connections between, you know, things you can see in these images, which are a product of technology. But radiologists, again, with a knowledge of anatomy and a clinical background, they're able to interpret complex images of the interior of the body. And I would say that the strength of the approach of visual assessment is really the ability to integrate information and notice patterns. There are limitations, of course. You know, with modern CT scanners, the amount of data and the number of images produced in a normal study is really incredible. You know, we're getting these elaborate three-dimensional pictures of the insides of the lungs that may consist of, you know, thousands of cross-sectional images or slices. So there's a lot of information for a radiologist to go through. So the sort of the precision of estimating the extent of disease, like how much lung fibrosis is present, is really a challenge. And it's a challenge for different radiologists to come up with the same visual estimate. So there's this inter-reader variability. And even for the same radiologist that, you know, looking at a different exam in the morning or the afternoon or a week later, there's some inconsistency. So you mentioned the pattern of UIP. You know, studies have definitely shown that even among highly trained experts, the consistency or inter-reader agreement for UIP is pretty modest.
Yeah.
And I think that shows more the challenge of the task rather than the, you know, the weakness of the the experts.
Sure.
And it's the same holds true for a task like visually estimating how much of the lung is occupied by fibrosis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a radiologist. My training is physics and engineering, but I think of that task as like the old contests of, you know, guess the number of jelly beans in the jar. Like, you see this, you're trying to put a lot of information together and come up with a guess.
Right.
So really our work in applying AI or just computer techniques in general to extract specific information from images was, you know, largely motivated by a recognition of this challenge of a visual task.
Yeah. And to bring this home clinically, I mean, we sit in multidisciplinary conference, you know, every week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if there's more than one radiologist in there, they're sort of bantering back and forth. And this is at National Jewish, where, look, our radiologists are some of the most expert in the world. And I, you know, I couldn't do my job without our excellent radiologists. But even they, who look at hundreds of chest high resolution CT scans on a weekly basis, often don't agree on whether UIP is present or not. We actually know, studies have shown us that the thing that radiologists disagree on most when it comes to UIP is the presence or absence of honeycombing. And honeycombing is a criterion that is crucial to identifying UIP. And radiologists have the most difficult time agreeing on that. And then, you know, you layer in extent, as you said, how much, you know, how much of the lung is occupied by fibrosis? Is it 10%? Is it 15? Is it 17.5? And that's one of the beauties of, you know, quantifying it with algorithms like yours, is actually giving us a hard objective number that we can use.
Please join us for the next part of our discussion on artificial intelligence in the analysis of HRCT.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PeerDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? please leave us a review in your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Dr. Swigris and Humphreys. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.